Joining us now is Anthony Shadid from our partner, the New York Times. He's in Beirut, Lebanon, but got a glimpse into the unrest in Syria yesterday with a quick trip inside of Syria. Anthony Shadid, good morning.
Good morning.
What glimpse did you get of the situation in Syria? I gather you had some FaceTime with a government official.
It was a glimpse and no more than that. I wouldn't want to speak too authoritatively about what I saw. Damascus, you know, the capital, and we've known this since the uprising began, you know, it has yet to reach Syria's two largest cities, and that includes the capital. There wasn't any visible military buildup there, and the city seemed rather ordinary. That's been the case throughout, and a lot of people have said that the uprising wouldn't gain the momentum it needs until it does reach either Damascus or Aleppo. I did have a few hours there. I was able to see a government official who has often served as a spokesperson for the government, and as well as a senior businessman there. And it was remarkable the degree to which, and you don't know if this is, you know, their own rhetoric or their own belief, but the degree to which they've cast this uprising as an armed rebellion. And they've used that reasoning to justify a ferocious crackdown that's, you know, led to the killing of hundreds, the arrest of thousands, and basically the siege of four cities in the country.
Does the language of where this is coming from, at least in the view of the government, remind you of the language of descriptions of unrest in some of the other countries you've been in over the last few months?
Well, you know, in Egypt and Tunisia, you could at least see a transition. You saw institutions powerful enough, namely the military, in place to carry out a transition from one form of rule to another. In places like Libya and Syria, you don't see that. And I think from another conversation I had with the businessman there, who was a confidant of President Bashar al-Assad, it was clear that they see this as a fight until the end. And he said that in so many words. There isn't a transition in the offing. It's not a transition that the government sees, that even the Obama administration sees. So I think what we're perhaps on the brink of is a very protracted struggle, and a struggle that could turn even messier in the months and years ahead.
So, Anthony Shadid, is that a testament to the lack of any sort of civic alternative inside Syria, or a testament to the willingness of the government to basically do a kind of all or nothing here?
Well, I think it probably reflects primarily how complicated Syria is as a country. It's a country, a fragile mosaic of a Sunni Muslim majority, but sizable minorities of Christians, Kurds, and heterodox Muslim sects. This government for 40 years has relied on the Alawite sect to buttress its power. And I think the thinking within the government, in particular the ruling elite, is that the fall of the government means, perhaps the extermination of the Alawite sect in Syria. I think that's why you're hearing language that suggests a fight to the end, a fight for survival. What was said to me in so many words that if this government falls, no one's going to protect the Alawites. No one's going to protect other minorities in the country. And it's an argument that the government has relentlessly used since this uprising began. The alternative to us is chaos. The alternative to us is sectarian strife, even civil war. And it has had some resonance among minorities in the country.
And, Anthony, you're a scholar of this region, in a sense, and I don't want to get too sort of pointy-headed about this, but certainly there was a lot of talk in Iraq of a devolving back to the sort of Ottoman divisions of Kurdistan, Basra in the south, and Baghdad. I mean, if you extend that map of, early in the 20th century, it included parts of Syria. Is there any sense that the borders and the demarcations of Syria are not as sacred as perhaps the Assad government believes?
Well, I think there's always a fear that lingers in countries like Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon of dismemberment, of dividing the country along ethnic or sectarian lines. I think it's a prospect that haunts, this part of the Middle East, and it's haunted it for a long time. I think what's afoot right now is part of this Arab Spring, as people have come to call it, is a struggle over determining identity at some level. Do we have a broader notion of identity as citizens, and as citizens we derive our rights from the government that's accountable to us? Or do we look for smaller identities that break along ethnic and sectarian lines? And I think that's the prospect in Syria right now. Can this rebellion, this uprising, these protests, revolve around this axis of the notion of identity? Or is the government's argument right, that its fall will lead to more strife, will lead to chaos, and will further divide the country along its smaller components?
It's an Arab version of the Federalist Papers, in a sense, that you're describing there. It's fascinating. Before we go, how determined is the government to not only control the situation on the ground in Syria, but also control the message to the international community?
it hasn't done much about controlling the message of the international community. It's barred most foreign journalists, and even my interview with a government official there was circumstantial. I mean, it was by luck that I talked to her. I think they're more worried about the internal situation and more worried about the region. I think in terms of the international community, there hasn't been a lot of attention paid to how they're trying to tailor their message.
All right, a glimpse. Anthony Shadid, thanks so much. And reporting live there from Beirut, Lebanon, Anthony Shadid from our partner, The New York Times, just back from Damascus, Syria, with a real window into the 7-week uprising over the rule of President Bashar Assad in Syria that has caused so much violence and unrest. But the Syrian government, according to Anthony Shadid, standing firm. Thank you, Anthony.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.